Somewhere in the darkness, there's a man they call the Skipper, fast asleep, dreaming of gold. He wakes before the sun does, even though he'd rather stay in bed. Curses the cold in Minnesota, why's it always so damn cold?
You're listening to Stonecast, Curling in the Twin Cities with Jordan Wickland and Christopher Lisney. We're sitting outside in Jordan's lovely house. He's got a fire going. I'm getting eaten up by mosquitoes. You can hear birds and in the fire.
That's true. It's Stonecast After Dark here on September 20th, I believe.
Yeah.
We're with Pete Westberg and Tim Solon. We had talked to Pete back in the spring, as our legions of loyal listeners may recall, and we are here to follow up about their time in Karlstad, Sweden, at the 2016 Men's Senior Curling Championships. But first, let's hit the mailbag.
Yeah, we have things to talk about.
What do you got, Chris?
Well, the first thing I wanted to talk about is we got a little bit of activity on our Twitter feed. The Schenectady Curling Club commented, Jordan had mentioned something about cribbage and backgammon being important side games to a curling career. They agreed, and they said cribbage was a big deal in their club, and then a whole bunch of other people said, oh yeah, cribbage. That I think we had talked about cribbage or something. So
a couple times.
Yeah, shout out to Schenectady Curling Club.
Yep, so. Absolutely. Next, we'd like to thank our UConn correspondent, Ben Matheson. Ben is an old crony of mine from Luther College, where we cut our teeth thanklessly on a publication called the Luther Review. Ben is a designer, brewer, man of the North, originally from Albert Lea, Minnesota. But Ben designed us up some logos, some handsome Stonecast logos that you may see online, yeah, here and there.
We're slowly getting them in all our different media outlets so that we're going to be nice and uniform. Our last mailbag is, I think we mentioned this last time, there's this fantasy curler who actually just got on a Twitter in August. I noticed his name. Well, he doesn't reveal his name, but it's called The Blank End. But he wrote a blog post about our podcast, and it was pretty nice, actually. Mentioned us by name, said that we were smart curler, you know, smart people to listen to, good conversationalists. But I want to highlight the negativity that he brought in, because we're Scandinavians, and that's what we do. So this is what he wrote as his last paragraph. As an East Coast elitist, I do feel a fair warning is needed at this point. This is a podcast created by Minnesotans and for Minnesotans. The North-Central accents run strong. I'm not talking Jerry Lundegaard, but perhaps a little Norm and Marge Gunderson. So if you are more comfortable with the rapid-fire cadence and intonation one hears in Boston and New York, you may want to increase the playback rate on your podcast app. I recommend 1.2 times. All right, let's get to it.
Okay.
Welcome, guys. Pete,
thank
welcome
you very
back.
Much.
Tim, it's good to have you on.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Thanks for providing the fire. It's pretty nice.
Very comfortable.
Yeah, we had aspired to do a backyard fire sooner or later, and the weather worked for us. A little warm. I was a little bit worried, setting everything up, sweating like a pig. But the weather has cooled, and we got a beautiful night in St. Paul for Stonecast After Dark. This is our first in a series of fireside chats, so I meant to bring up some FDR quotes.
It's the first in the series.
Oh, of course. This is fireside chat number one.
We should do it in the winter.
We're honored to be here.
All right, so remember in our last interview, the first thing, one of the first things you said is that you're going against the Ruskies, you said.
The Ruskies, that's correct, the first game.
And it looks like you guys waxed them, 7-4.
That's not exactly waxing him. But
it was close early on.
Oh, yeah, obviously. They scored three at the end.
Well, the game was over by then, though.
Did somebody let up?
We let up. Maybe I missed a shot or two. I don't know.
I remember giving up the three, though, yeah.
Remember the ice was kind of rough at first? It was really swingy.
Right.
And it was kind of dirty, so a lot of rocks were picking. I'm not sure where the dirt came from because it kind of disappeared after that game.
One of the things they – back in 2011 when we played in St. Paul at Senior Worlds, there was a lot of practice before the event started.
Oh, yeah.
Just the general curling membership was invited and encouraged to go down and throw on the ice. I think what they wanted to do is they just wanted to work the ice in a little bit, work the rocks in a little bit, because they push the rocks with the sandpaper before the event starts, and you've got the ice is relatively green and new. So they wanted to get some play on it in St. Paul. They didn't do that in Sweden. So no one had thrown on the ice before our first game.
Wow.
And
which was on Friday, April 15th.
Yep. So you're out there throwing on brand new ice, and the rocks had just recently been pushed on the sandpaper, so it was moving a lot.
But there was a lot of black flecks of something on her, too. It was just rough.
As the week went on, the ice settled in a little bit. And the ice was good. I'm not trying to say there was anything wrong with the ice. I thought that the ice crew did a great job. But the first game is always a challenge. You got to get used to the ice, as does the other team. And
what's it like playing against a team that is, you know, you can't talk to really?
Well, they spoke a little English, but you know it's a competitive game, so you're not conversing with the other team a lot.
You're not giving them a lot of trying to get them to laugh.
What's going on with Putin over there? No, we weren't talking politics. I mean, you introduce yourself before the game. You exchange gifts, which is a nice thing to do.
Exchange gifts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With every game you exchange.
Yeah. Every game.
It's usually it's something fairly minor. It might be like Swiss chocolates, or you know, we had a little card, identification card that had our team and our contact information on the back and a photograph of our team on the front. Then we handed out pins from our curling clubs. We had Eau Claire, St. Paul, Heather Curling Club down in Mapleton, and Duluth Curling Club. So we had five guys and we had four different clubs represented. So
we kind of developed a relationship with the Germans, though.
You know, yeah.
And we had a good game against them, beat them, but they were good buddies of ours after a while.
Their English was fantastic.
Excellent.
All right, so Jordan, do you want to take it up on game number four, Monday, April 18th?
Well, I'd love to, except
is that Latvia?
Yes.
I thought it was Latvia.
That was a great game.
The schedule I printed was not accurate.
No, that's Latvia.
I know the outcome. Chris maybe knows the outcome. You guys certainly know the outcome. But if there's a play-by-play memory you might recall before the big reveal, we'd like to hear it.
Well, the seventh end didn't turn out the way we wanted it to, and the Latvian skip made the shot of a lifetime. He'll be telling his grandchildren, and if he has them, great-grandchildren, about that till the day he goes to the great curling club in the sky, let me tell you. he made a quadruple for six. And we were...
I think you were up by two.
We were up by two, yeah. And then all of a sudden, we were up by two, and then all of a sudden they're up by four.
Things started to go bad. And
we kind of looked at each other and went, crap.
But I think anybody that's curled, you know, competitively or even socially, you can kind of tell when the end is starting to go bad.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Sometimes you don't catch on right away, but eventually you go, we are in big trouble. And we knew we were in big trouble, and then... And he made the shot. He made the shot.
Our last shot in the seventh end, Jeff Goodland's last shot, we were trying to draw it down on top of one of their rocks in the back of the house to kind of freeze it and negate the possibility of what ultimately happened. Right?
Multiple points.
He had to remove four of our stones from the house to get his six. So it's not like we don't have any rocks in the house, but they weren't in very good spots. And, I think we were trying to draw high.
And we had two options
the second option was to draw back down, and the rock started to move early, and we lost our line on our primary shot. So the alternate shot was to draw down to one of their backing stones, and we hit it and we stayed out.
We reacted too late and ended up being in the worst spot possible.
We left it in the worst spot possible. So, I mean, I guess you could say that was a sweeper's error. We thought we could get it back to freeze on one of theirs in the back of the 8 foot, and we left it in the 4 foot for an easy double that ultimately made an easy quadruple. And when we
we've got that on videotape, and to watch this, which I try not to do very often, but it's just like winning the lottery. The rocks are just barely missing ours and are just flowing out of the house.
So the second game on Tuesday was with Switzerland. You said that one went to extra ends as well.
Yeah. They were not as good as Scotland, but almost as good. And that was a tough game.
Yeah.
A lot of great shots made. It went down to the wire.
Their skip and their third were fantastic. Again, I think they are former men's worlds players.
Yeah.
Those two guys knew what they were doing out there. They really, really were good.
And they invited us to the Zurich men's this year, so we got that going.
Are you going to go?
Which is nice.
I'd love to. I don't know if we have time, but.
You know what? And after the game story, they brought a collapsible elk horn. You know what an elk horn is? Those long, big horns.
I want to get one of those for up in my cabin.
Well, they had a
collapsible.
It would the segments would collapse into each other.
Telescope?
It was a telescoping.
Collapsible. Yeah.
Telescoping elk horn. And after the game, we were sitting upstairs having beers and socializing, and they played the elk horn for us. How cool was that? And then our alternate Phil DeVore, he went out, he played the elk horn.
He played it.
What song did he play?
I've got it on
tape.
He played
some rock song out of the elk horn.
More rest than when he's sweeping.
We went through this whole path of going through your story of your games. Mm-hmm. We've kind of got off path, which I think is good because this is much more interesting. But I just want to summarize how you guys ended up. Sure. All right. So we just talked about Switzerland. Great team. They brought the elk horn. That was on Tuesday. And then the next you played Germany.
Yep.
And you beat Germany.
Yep.
6-4. And then on Thursday you played Belgium.
Yep.
And you beat them 10-1.
Yep.
So they were probably defeated. They probably didn't have their hearts into it.
No, they didn't have a lot of experience. They're great guys, very enthusiastic, but they weren't, super experienced curlers. They were elated when they got their point. He made a nice draw to get it, actually.
So we ended up winning our pool play based on the fact that we beat Scotland.
Yep,
you were at the top. They only had one loss as well.
Yep, to us.
And then, you got in the semifinals or quarterfinals.
Quarterfinals.
And you played Denmark.
Yep.
Well, it was kind of interesting leading up to that Denmark game because the World Committee had to kind of decide the seeds.
Who plays who, yeah.
And apparently, maybe you got some more insight on this, but it was pretty controversial. Scotland had to end up playing Canada right out of the chute. And they were probably the third best team there. Yeah. So you're matching up maybe the number one team with the three team. Yeah. And what we surmise is that the Swedish committee wanted to match up, wanted to give Sweden some kind of a path to the finals. We're not real sure.
So what they did is they took the top three teams from each pool. So you got nine teams for a quarterfinal round. Well, you got to drop one of those teams to make it to eight.
The bye.
Right. Well, no, what they did is they took the eighth and the ninth seeds, and Germany lost to Ireland. And I think New Zealand had to play Ireland then, right? So,
and Ireland got to the semifinals.
They won the bronze. So Canada was seeded number one, and we were seeded number two, and New Zealand was seeded number three. So they take the top teams out of each pool, and they figured out who was 1, 2, 3. Canada and New Zealand were undefeated. We had one loss, but somehow we ended up number two.
We ended up beating out New Zealand somehow.
Yeah. So.
Well, probably because you won your pool. Well, was New Zealand
so
in the
they.
Same pool
New
as Canada?
New Zealand was well, undefeated again, and they won their pool. And Canada
think
was
I think you were trying to set up Sweden.
Well, they're Canadian transplants, you know. But they're good curlers. You know, they're not,
you know
they're
what?
Good,
I have a note about the New Zealand team I want to get to in a moment, but continue.
All right, well, let's run down what happens. So you lost in the quarterfinals. Yep. Close game, 5-4. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looked like you were ahead into the seventh end.
Yeah, we kind of
they stole two on you. On
they kind of we kind of I wouldn't say dominated the game, but we controlled the game. That's the way I'd describe it. And came down to the last end. We were playing very well, and they were putting up guards because they had to steal. And we were peeling the guards, and then it came down to Tim's and I shots, and my last shot as second made kind of a half a peel. So, and I should back up, our lead put two perfect stones in the house.
He put one
right on the button and then one just on top of the button, just a little bit off center.
Underneath our center guard. you couldn't ask for better shots.
It was absolutely perfect.
And Jeff Addis put one on the top of the button and then put one on top of that underneath their center guard.
Wow.
Perfect. Two perfect stones. Yep.
So we kept peeling and they kept putting up the center guard and we peeled and peeled. Like I said, on my second shot, I ended up taking one of our lead's rocks off the house and rolling our rock over as a corner guard. And then they threw up another center guard. Tim peeled that. We're still in great shape. And then they put up another center guard, and then that's kind of when we got in a little bit of trouble. We missed the peel. And then I don't remember on Jeff's shots. His first shot, I think he peeled.
I made my first peel, and my second peel I didn't make. So they put up, they replaced the center guard, and
Jeff got rid of one of those.
Well, my second shot was an intern peel. I got it going a little, turned it in a tiny bit, and we swept it all the way down and we nosed it and drove it right back in to our stone on the forefoot, which was horrible. And then Jeff made one peel, and then they were laying one and they made a great shot to hit one of our, like a tramp stone. It was an unbelievable shot.
They were
and he
trying
rolled
to hit
all
one
the way,
on the side and then roll over and
the
guard
the,
their count. But they rolled way over into the house for second
right.
count.
It's kind of like a little, was it a little behind the guard, the one that you, our shot?
No,
that,
I was on the other side.
Anyways,
so there must have been something over
so they're
there.
Like maybe a quarter under this corner guard.
They're about a third under. Yeah.
And now
so
we
could see it.
Yeah, so
we decided, I mean, so now if we have a last shot for the win.
or a tie.
We either got to just draw down and outcount them, but they're pretty close to the button, a little bit off center. And we decided to throw hack weight or back line weight and just tap them back and roll to the button. And got into a straight part of the ice, and the rock didn't curl at all, and we just barely touched this rock, and it the guy swept it through the back of the house.
So we left the two in the house, and they scored two. And you know what it boils down to is I missed my second peel badly, and Jeff, I mean his rock did, he threw a good rock, but it didn't do what we expected to do. So your third and your skip miss their last rock in the last end of a world game, and you lose. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you got to, yeah. Jeff Addis's two shots in that eighth end against Denmark were perfect. Pete's two shots were fine. We were fine after Pete's two shots. We were fine after my, we're in good shape after my first shot. After my second shot, I threw a poor rock, and we were in trouble right now. And, you know,
so
we didn't
get,
we didn't dig ourselves out, and we lost, and that's the way it is. And if we had won, now we're playing Sweden, and Sweden won the gold, and they're playing really well. So there's no guarantee if we had even won, we would have got by Sweden, because you know they were playing well.
Yeah.
But
so
bottom
Sweden,
line is
Sweden
you're not gonna win a game at a world level if when your third and your skip miss their last rocks in the last end. It ain't gonna happen. In a tight game.
So Sweden defeated Canada 7-4.
Yes.
Do you feel there was a...
In the final.
A home country advantage? Did the Swedes, did that come into the round robin play or in the knockout rounds?
The Swedes didn't finish top on their pool. The Swedes didn't finish number one in their pool, but they played really, really well.
They were in Canada's pool, and they lost to Canada in the round robin, but not by much. It was nip and tuck, maybe an extra in.
They were good.
They were
so
solid.
After the quarterfinals, the semifinals, so Denmark played Sweden,
right,
and they lost 7-1, and then Canada played Ireland,
right.
Which I didn't know Ireland. I mean, is curling big in Ireland?
What happens is
across Giant's Causeway. I know you from Scotland.
You would think it would be big.
I think what happens is, you know, I think most of the curling is done in Scotland, but you have people from England, people from Wales, people from Ireland living in Scotland and playing. And then what's unusual or what's unique about the seniors is that they allow teams from all these other countries or regions of the United Kingdom that you don't get in men's and junior men's play. You get Scotland, right?
Right.
But in seniors, you get Scotland, you get Ireland, you get Wales, and you get England. Hmm. But all those guys are curling up in Scotland, and they all know each other. Yeah. So they go back to their homelands, and they represent, you know, from
Ireland.
Their home.
But they play in Scotland. Yeah. Yeah,
and they're good.
So the finals then ended up being Sweden won the gold, Canada got the silver, and then Ireland got the bronze.
That's correct.
Is that an okay result, do you think, based on the quality of play that you observed?
Well, we wanted to be in there, so no, it wasn't okay. But we thought we could win it.
You know, I didn't really know how good Sweden was until we got there and we started watching them, and they were very good, very good.
And the Canadians are always tough. They're always going to be in there. You know, and the Irish team was playing their skip, Peter Wilson.
Yeah, he's
what
intense.
A scrappy, intense, scrappy guy. Just he's a competitor. Intense.
Was he and short?
Yeah. Yeah.
See,
only short people are scrappy.
That's true. That was a little. I just wanted to point that out. That you guys used when you use scrappy. That's like, well, he's short, but.
Well, he just
competed.
Wills himself to win. Yeah, that's what he does.
Well, how is one scrappy in curling? I mean, Darren Sproles is scrappy because he's 4 inches shorter than everybody else and tries to get through the seam.
But he can dunk.
What? Can he? That'd be amazing.
Well,
how are curlers scrappy?
You should listen to this guy make his sweep calls, skip. Peter Wilson, is that his name?
Yeah, Peter Wilson.
I mean, he's just screaming at the top of his lungs. So that passion just kind of permeates his whole team.
Okay.
And then it kind of raises the level of the
So
of
it's
the
more
other
of an emotional
players.
Scrappiness.
Yeah.
Well, he's got a good ESF, emotional scrappiness factor.
Yeah.
But he had really good draw weight, and I think he could step up and bail his guys out when they need to be bailed out, you know. And he's just that's also the scrappiness. He refuses to die. He just can't kill the guy. He refuses to die.
If he was 6'5",
like first one in, last one out,
and he had those same qualities, what would you use instead of scrappy?
Dominant.
Not
yeah,
dominant.
Exactly.
Terminator.
Exactly.
Terminator. Wow.
More rest than when he's sweeping.
This was a spin. It's naked back at happenings. Come on, Storm.
Anyway, you guys spent some time in Karlstad.
Yes.
What are your impressions of Sweden and the Swedes?
Well, my ancestry is partly Swedish, so what's not to like about that? So
mine too.
Before we left for Sweden, my sister passed along some ancestry information to me, and I was able to go to the village or the city of where my great great grandfather came from. So that was part of the whole experience. So, yeah, I love Sweden. Karlstad is just outside of Stockholm. And we were lucky enough to spend some time in Stockholm as well. So,
did you go to that big ship? What's that ship? The Vasa.
The Vasa.
Yes, we did. That was fantastic.
Yeah, that's a great testament to Swedish engineering. Build a big-ass ship, send it out in the harbor, and watch it sink.
1,000 meters down, down from the dock.
They brought that up in the 70s?
That 80s? Restoration is incredible.
Early 60s.
Yeah. Okay. Up, yeah.
When I went there, they were still working on it. So
still working on it now.
So you've been there. We've all been to the Vasa Museum?
Yeah.
Yeah. From a historical perspective, that's just a gold mine. I mean, to walk through that museum, to see the ship itself, and know that it's, what, 90, 95% original? And then to see all the items that they've taken out of the ship, it's amazing. Just to think how old it is, the early, what, 1628 or something like that?
I was going to say 1627.
I think it was.
But I don't.
We'll try to avoid it.
It's old, you know. It's pretty old. All the things that are there that were on that ship and in excellent condition. It just was an amazing place. Yeah. One of the things that struck me on the train from Stockholm out to Karlstad was how my family's originally from northwestern Wisconsin, and I've been to northern Wisconsin and northern Minnesota a lot. And the terrain, the landscape between Stockholm and Karlstad reminded me so much of northwest Wisconsin, northern Minnesota. It's no wonder why these people settled where they did.
My brother and I bought a car over there, a Volvo, and we spent a week in Sweden and a week in Norway. We drove all around Sweden up to where they got to make those red, you know, those red horse things, whatever those things are. And that's what we were like. Sweden looked just like northern Minnesota.
Yeah, Wisconsin, you
know, it's no wonder Minnesota. The Swedish immigrants, you know, back in the mid-1800s when they came here, they settled where they did, because it must have felt exactly like home, because it looked exactly like what I'm used to seeing up in northern Minnesota, northern Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. That was pretty cool, I thought. So. Mm-hmm. And I traveled a lot when I worked for 3M for many years, and like the last 10 years I worked for 3M, I traveled a lot in Asia. And you stick out like a sore thumb when you're traveling in Asia, when you're, you know, mostly Scandinavian. When I traveled in Sweden for the first time, I traveled overseas, and I could fit in with a crowd. Nobody knew I was a Yankee unless I had Levi's jeans on or something, or unless I opened my mouth. You know, then they know you're a Yankee. But
in our first interview, you were hoping that the Friday night banquet would feature ABBA. Did it?
No. But heavily featured the ABBA music at the closing ceremonies.
Yes. All right.
And when we were in Stockholm, we visited the ABBA Museum.
Nice. I didn't see the ABBA Museum when I went there. Yeah. But Stockholm was beautiful.
Oh, old town.
Stockholm, down by the piers and the brightly colored houses. Oh,
it's gorgeous. Yeah.
Cobblestone streets, fun bridges.
That's old town. Yeah, yeah, it's gorgeous.
The reindeer is incredible.
Oh, that was the other question.
Oh,
and the Swedish
meatballs.
I
was going to bring that.
Swedish meatballs.
Did you eat reindeer?
Well, not only reindeer, but the Swedish meatballs are incredible.
Oh, yeah.
But reindeer is so tasty with a little brown gravy on it, red gravy.
Ooh. Lingonberries.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you're lucky, you get the one with the red nose in your gravy. Like, oh, very tender.
What was that the restaurant we went to? Five small houses?
Five small houses,
Small house.
Fantastic.
Unbelievable. It's a famous restaurant.
It's like back in the 300 years old was the restaurant, or something like that, or 600 years old the restaurant was?
Something like that.
Wow. Crazy.
Jordan, did you pour us some aquavit?
I did.
You drank it already.
The last time that we were together, both you and, well, I had a beer though. You and I were both not drinking.
Right.
Because you were giving it up for Lent, and I give it up for a silly reason. So it's kind of nice that we can have a drink together. Would you like to?
Let's do that.
Let's do an aquavit.
Would you gentlemen like some aquavit?
Please.
I love aquavit. All right, I had aquavit at my wedding.
All right, so I'm gonna give the two. These are this is Swedish blown glass I've had since 2001.
Yeah.
When my family, as I said earlier, we went to Sweden for a few weeks.
Perfect.
And so this is from Malmo, the glass blowing capital of the world. So
outstanding,
even more so than
you guys have been chucking beer bottles all around my lawn all night. I'd ask you not do that with those two. Chris, would you prefer the Luther Norse?
Sure.
Or the big chicken?
No, Norse.
Give me the Luther shot glass.
Did you guys know that the
is this the Duluth brand of aquavit?
Vikra. Yeah. First of all, did you guys know that the giant flaming chicken on old 70s Trans Ams is an old Norse mythology thing?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's from Hans.
The stuff
Pearson
we learn at these podcasts.
Really? Did you have any aquavit when you were over there?
Probably.
So what are we toasting to, gentlemen?
Oh, let's just toast to the start of the curling season.
Shall we stand and over the fire?
To the 2016-2017 curling season.
Too bad this is not videotaped.
And to you, gentlemen, representing the U.S. at the senior championships.
It's a great pleasure and
thank
honor.
You. Thank you kindly.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the
Skull.
Invite. Skull.
Skull.
Okay, so we're not supposed to throw this?
Please don't. Please don't.
Ooh. Wow. Oh, that was impressive.
That was sweet.
Fantastic. Thank you.
You know, there is we're a pro Sweden house around here. I just have a brief thing I want to do. If you'll just give me a minute. Sweden is a unitary parliamentary constitutional monarchy under King Carl Gustaf XVI. The unified kingdom was established in the 12th century, and it may interest international border battlers like Chris that Sweden and Norway were joined for 91 years in the Swedish-Norwegian Union of 1814 under a common monarch as Sweden subjugated the weak Norwegians before Sweden accepted Norway's secession in 1914 very amicably. Sweden borders Norway to the west and Finland to the east and is connected to Denmark in the south by a bridge and tunnel. One of the first descriptions of the Swedes, or Vikings as it was in the text, follows by the Arab traveler and scribe Ibn Fadlan, later imagined by Michael Crichton in his book Eaters of the Dead, which is excellent. But this is a true quote from a true scribe. I have seen the Rus, as he mistook the Swedes, as they came on their merchant journeys and encamped by the Itel. I have never seen more perfect physical specimens, tall as date palms, blonde and ruddy. They wear neither tunics nor caftans, but the men wear a garment which covers one side of the body and leaves a hand free. Each man has an axe, a sword, and a knife, and keeps each by him at all times. The swords are broad, grooved, of the Frankish sort. Eaters of the Dead and the scribe Ibn Fadlan. Sweden, and this is a list of my own making, is known for Vikings, Alfred Nobel, who invented dynamite, general social progressivism, ABBA, the writer Stieg Larsson of the Millennium/Dragon Tattoo series,
yeah.
Lutefisk, reindeer, which are beautiful to look at and even better to eat, Bjorn Borg, whom I met during my time in Sweden, international tennis superstar, the new government-mandated six-hour workday, which Pete doesn't have to worry about anymore, because he's happily retired.
Yeah.
I'm a little worried about that. I would like that. And a bevy of blue-eyed, buxom, blonde beauties from north to south, Baltic to the, not the Caspian, the Antarctic Sea, the Arctic Sea way up there. And Sweden, generally pretty badass country, host to the four of us, the two Stonecast hosts, and Pete Westberg and Tim Solon. Didn't have the last name in front of me. So we'd like to thank Sweden for sponsoring this podcast and generally being a place we'd all like to return to sometime.
Here.
Thank you, King Carl.
Here, here.
Here, here.
Skål!
Come on, baby, put the rock in the house.
inside are waiting, but they give until they've given all they have. Dead on their feet. The skipper isn't certain, but he thinks that maybe this could be the year when they defeat the world forever and they bring that medal home. Now it seems she's away. She's taking it day by day. When it comes, he'll be ready to play, because he knows he's got the curve. Darkness, there's a man they call the skipper, fast asleep, dreaming of gold.